Hello and welcome back to Channel 9 Live. We're here at Microsoft Ignite and Zed. You got to say the word Zed because we're in New Zealand, isn't that right?
Absolutely.
I have a really special guest today. Why don't you tell us who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name's Charlotte Walsh. I'm the CEO of a business called Dynamic Controls, and we're based down in Christchurch. And we're part of a global company, in our own right, but we're part of a larger global parent as well, in the health tech home medical space.
So tell us a little bit about sort of the challenges that people have with sort of home health that you're trying to solve.
Yeah, well, we started kind of small and in an area that we understand really well, which is around power wheelchair controllers and scooter controllers. And one of the key problems there is that the people who provide wheelchairs to, you know, to users around the world have to be able to service them. And over a 5-year period, and that can be really difficult to service from a distance.
Right.
So you can imagine, like in the US, some really big spaces, big states, a lot of distance to travel. And often they don't understand, you know, what's going on, what's wrong with the wheelchair. They maybe they call someone or some, you know, the user calls them and says, I've got my chair is stopped. And they say, well, what sort of controller have you got? And they go, I don't know, it's black. Okay, what's wrong? I don't know, it's not going.
It's making a noise.
Yeah.
It's on fire.
Right? Uh-huh. God, I hope not.
Yeah.
But then for the service agent, they're going, well, maybe this person is like a 3-hour drive away. I've got to drive all the way out there to figure out what's going on. I don't know if I got the right stuff or not. I need to come all the way back. And so all this kind of thing.
Right.
So what we try to solve, or what we've started working on around about 3 years ago, was how to take our control systems, which we've been designing and manufacturing for the last 45 years or so.
Of course.
How to bring the Internet of Things to them, so that then they're smart and we can remote monitor them from any sort of distance, anywhere in the world, and do that live if we need to, and so that that information is available to our service agents who need to look after those chairs. Uh-huh. Now, one of the cool things with that then is those service agents are then able to tell what's actually wrong with the chair when somebody calls them. They're able to see exactly what's going on, what the faults have been, how things have been, and they're able to then reduce costs so that when they do go out there, they know they're going out there with the right thing, or maybe even just fix it on the phone because they can actually see what's going
right
on. So that in itself is interesting as field service.
Sure.
But the really interesting part of it then is, well, how do we use that information to start to predict how to manage costs?
Oh, I see.
And then beyond that, once we started to look at that, we said, well, now we're understanding how the wheelchair works and what activity is for a wheelchair. But the key part of a wheelchair is the person.
Yeah.
Sitting in it, right?
Of course. I mean, there's no need for a chair without the person.
Exactly.
Right?
And so the activity of the wheelchair is a proxy for the activity of the person. And so that person, they get out of bed in the morning and their way of getting about is to get into a powered wheelchair. So when they're in that powered wheelchair, we know that they're up and about and they're living their life. And so from that information, we can also tell a little bit about what's going on in their life.
Got
how
it.
Active they are, when they have breakfast, how many hours in the day they're active, how things work. Now that's not of interest to us as such, but it's a real interest to the clinician or the rehab specialist. And so what we're looking at is then, so how do we use that information to help the clinician to work with the user to come out with better health outcomes? And how do we bring machine learning to that information to actually draw insights out of it? And that's kind of the stepping stones for us. And we're going to go broader from there, but that's the starting point.
And that's amazing, because what you started out with is you had a problem of like, hey, we didn't know how to fix these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned into something completely different to make the life of the person using it a lot better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about technology. Uh-huh. How are you using technology to make this work? You mentioned IoT.
Mm-hmm.
Can we start with that?
Yeah, sure. So how we started was to kind of clip on the IoT around the outside to start with. Good way to approach that. And now we've built the Internet of Things enabling technology into the control systems themselves, so that we're launching new control systems at the moment, brand new developments. They're just being released in Europe and the US right now.
Got it.
And they have that capability built on board. So everything that goes out there is able to be connected, and connected in an Internet of Things kind of way, but also able to be connected so that we can hook up to other biometric sensors. So not just about the chair itself, but then we can start to take other inputs about the person's actual biometrics, maybe pulse oximetry, maybe how their blood pressure is, all those sort of things. So it becomes a little bit of a hub. I talk about all of this from a perspective of a wheelchair, but actually it applies to the whole home. But the wheelchair is our kind of starting point. So the control system has this capability now built into it. So we're able to measure all sorts of interesting things from a clinician point of view or a service agent point of view.
So tell us a little bit about the sort of the struggles that you may have had early on with IoT, because IoT is like this nascent thing where it feels like It's kind of all over the place, but you sort of harnessed it. Tell us about the challenges you had early on.
Yeah, I suppose a couple of key challenges for us is we don't make something just for New Zealand or just for the US. We make a product that is sold globally. So we're the largest supplier of control systems globally. And so it has to be able to work everywhere. So we kind of broke it down into several kind of layers. The first is we need to have the right kind of user interface. The second is, so the right way of collecting and showing the data on board.
Sure.
Then we need to have the right kind of way of transporting it to somewhere securely.
Right.
And we need to be able to develop that in a way that works for health data, not just machine data. So it has to be HIPAA compliant.
Of course.
And then beyond that, then we need to have the right kind of back end that allows us to store it and manipulate it and apply the machine learning to it so we can actually draw out these insights and then feed them back again. So for us, the key thing was to be able to pick partners that we could work with to provide each of those stages of the value chain. We don't want to be able to develop all of that stuff ourselves,
right,
too much risk. And I know another number of other companies who have tried to develop it for themselves, but that's not a place that we kind of wanted to go.
Right.
So we've got these great partners, and of course Microsoft, and then locally Intergen is the kind of key interface for us, have been the partner for that whole back-end side of things with the machine learning. And so when we were trying to make sense of, you know, yes, we're collecting this data, what the heck do we do with it, where do we put it, and all those sort of things, that's where Intergen came in to help us understand and to show us what the Microsoft suite could do. And then from there, we then have spent time with Intergen, with Microsoft, learning more about those tools. Really exciting stuff.
So let's talk a little bit about it. Hopefully, if you have any questions, please submit them so we can ask them. Let's talk a little bit about, with IoT, there's this notion of security.
Sure.
And you mentioned like HIPAA compliance, which is a stringent sort of US law mm-hmm. that you have to sort of abide by. How do you manage to make IoT secure and safe?
Sure. Well, I suppose for us, we are developing products that have to meet the FDA standards in the first place. And those standards are similar to other ones in other locations around the world as well. And so there are design standards and security type standards that we have to meet. So at the design end of the actual hardware and software, those standards we meet already as a start. Then beyond that, then how we transport and then how we store and manage the data has to be done in a way which meets those compliance requirements. So both in a health security way, but also in a general cybersecurity sort of way. And again, that's why it's been really important for us to choose partners, and i.e. Microsoft, who actually understand that stuff really well. And it's not just about the US. One of the cool things about Microsoft as a partner, for example, is yes, they understand the FDA requirements and 21 CFR and all those sort of things. And they also understand what's required in terms of HIPAA. They understand what's required in terms of various ISO standards around cybersecurity, but the key thing for us is they understand what's required in Germany, which is quite different again, and what's required for China, quite different again. So they've targeted the specialist areas and they manage that for us, and that's exciting for us.
And so this is something that sort of the service sort of takes care of you?
Yeah, totally.
That's amazing.
And takes that risk away, or at least minimizes it, and helps us have confidence in how we're approaching things. And again, because it's a global play, we can't afford to have bit players all over the place. We need someone who gets it right, you know, globally.
So tell me, as a CEO, what is it like to be able to shift risk? Because there's risk everywhere. And I mean, if I was running a company, I'd try to shift risk to someone else. Tell me about the confidence you have in Microsoft to be able to do these things.
Sure. So I suppose first up, I would say it's share risk more so than shift, because for us, the responsibility is always something we take seriously, and that we have the partners who actually can deliver on that. For us with Microsoft, what they're bringing to the party is a whole lot of knowledge, a whole lot of tools, a whole lot of experience, and then specialist application of those in different regions and for different tool sets. And what it means is that then is, for example, if we want to do third-party audits or we want to engage the FDA with something and work through, you know, how we progress something together, we know that Microsoft is able to be part of that conversation if we need them to be. I think I'm going to maybe get the word slightly wrong, but Microsoft is a Microsoft Trust Center. So they've actually put real thought and energy into creating the kind of environment that helps people like myself and like our legal counsel and our compliance or regulatory affairs people feel confident that these people get it. They actually, you know, they speak our language.
So let's talk a little bit about the machine learning aspect of things. What kind of data are you actually getting from these devices?
Sure.
And how are you wanting to use it in order to do prediction or any kind of machine learning?
Sure. So the data that we're getting, and this is, I suppose, the interesting thing about machine learning. If we look at the data that we're getting just of itself, then we sort of go, okay, we can see what's happening with the battery, we can see when the power wheelchair is being driven and when certain aspects are being used. But actually, the interesting thing is then when we start to look at a whole lot of other parameters that we're collecting beneath that, and we've decided to go big. We said, collect everything we can, and then we'll figure out afterwards if it makes sense or not.
Right.
And that's where we apply the machine learning to then help us make sense of it. And I suppose we've done that because we're not sure right at the moment. We know some things make sense to understand. We're not sure about others and how they might relate in a future play. And where we might also bring in other data sets, like, for example, terrain or weather or other sets of medical data, for example. So for us, machine learning early steps is first about kind of trending, getting our feet wet, and then figuring out how to go sort of deeper and deeper. And then beyond that for us, it's about taking it beyond just the power wheelchair and thinking more about someone's whole life and, you know, in the home environment with or without a wheelchair. So how do we understand that? But taking everything that we've learnt and apply it as a backbone, if you like, and applying it to no matter what sort of sensor or IoT device we might be using.
And so right now you're in a position where it's just like, let's just get all the data we can,
mm-hmm.
and then just sort of use that to mine later on.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've tried to create a backbone which is really scalable.
Right.
And partners who are scalable.
So tell us a little bit about the people that use your products. How is their lives improving? We have about 5 minutes left. I want to get to the actual people because these are what are most important.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose the starting point for us actually has always been with the people.
Yeah.
So how do we make a difference in their lives? And we need to understand their lives to be able to make a difference in it,
sure.
right? So we've spent a lot of time and continue to spend a lot of time working with our users around that. And there were sort of three key things that come through for us. Obviously how the thing actually drives, but then connectivity and health are really big things for people, whether you're the user yourself or maybe a loved one or a carer or someone like that. And so for us then, one of the things that we've found really powerful and that we really are starting to get excited about bringing to the market for the users and the carers is that ability to give them information that's really of interest to them when they need it, but be able to apply it in a way that's coaching. So be able to use machine learning to take data, you know, from how they're actually living or driving or, you know, experiencing their life in the power wheelchair, for example, to take that data off, apply machine learning to it, and then give them coaching feedback, back through an app. So that's either to the carer or to the user. That side of things is really fascinating. We think adds a whole lot more value than just a dashboard, if you like.
Because there might be a situation where the care provider is just not aware of a particular habit
totally.
That they might be seeing, and they say, oh my goodness, this data is telling me that I need to help them in this way as well.
Yes, that's right. So basic stuff like charging, charging wheelchair sort of things, but also much more interesting things like coaching around how they are pressure relieving while they're in the chair.
Sure.
Or, for example, hey, we've noticed that you like to go to the supermarket, you know, every Thursday, and we can see it's coming up Thursday again. Give your chair a really good deep charge before you head off.
Right.
Information that sort of relates to how they're actually using their environment and their activity in it. So for the user themselves, as well as for the carer.
And that's amazing, because now we're coming to a place where the devices themselves will start to have a knowledge of who is using them, how they're using them, and they'll be like, you could imagine like a Roomba.
Yeah.
Imagine a wheelchair that once you've set it down knows to go and charge itself.
Exactly.
Or knows when to do something, or knows that, for example, on Thursdays that you like to do your arm workout, so let me lower the chair a little bit, you know?
Totally, that's exactly it. You got all those, that's exactly the things.
That's amazing. And so how long have you folks been working on these things?
Oh, well, around about 3 years specifically on Internet of Things, and of course much longer for other stuff, so
You mentioned wheelchairs, but what other range of devices are you working with?
Sure. So without getting into too many specifics, in the home environment there are a number of medical sort of devices. So there are things like beds, there might be things like oxygen, for example, that someone's using, someone might transfer into a Lazy Boy, manual chairs, there are. When someone moves into a home environment, there are a number of things like home care environment. There are a number of key pieces that help them live their life there. And then around that, there are other things which they may already be using. For example, if they're diabetic, they may be already taking data off that. So how do we link that in? I mean, other things that add to the picture, if you like. So
how do we make this, like, I worry, for example, let's just say I'm a diabetic and I'm also in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Let's just say I'm sending out glucose levels out and my wheelchair knows where I've been. Mm-hmm. How do I make these things safe, right?
Yes.
I don't want people to know these things, not because I'm afraid, but because they could use it against me, right?
Yeah, sure. So I suppose that comes down to the fundamental that the data is the user's data. It's not our data. And that's why we have, we work through a process in terms of permissions, for example, and security.
Sure.
And it's really important that we understand that right from the get-go and we don't think it's ours.
Sure.
So So that, you know, what we're really looking there for is for the users to want to engage and want to share, and similarly for the clinicians to want to engage and want to share. And that's one of the things that we've found really encouraging, is that all these players do really want to share because they know that the benefit they get back is really huge, or that they're helping others in the community in the same sort of way. And that's exciting to kind of see that whole altruistic, make the world better piece really playing out.
So for those that are watching, usually our audience are developers. What kind of services are you using to make sort of everything work?
Well, Azure, obviously, for the back end, and then there's a variety of machine learning apps, if you like, or plugins that we're putting into that. And I suppose that's one of the things that I really got out of some recent learnings with the Microsoft and Intergen team, is that when I, as a CEO, create a development team, you know, who are working on developing this, I don't need to get a whole load of developers. I need some, but I need mostly architects and integrators, because Microsoft will have all these pieces that we can plug together in the right sort of way to create something. Rather than having to build it from scratch ourselves, we can actually, you know, plug these pieces together. So
I love it, yeah.
So that's kind of like Lego for us, which is exciting, because we don't have to be experts at everything. We just have to be really great at integrating.
So to finish up, where can people find out more about you and what you do?
Sure. If they go to dynamiccontrols.com, that's a whole lot of stuff about dynamic controls and what we do.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you around the next